for whatever reason, we all have a why. We all have a reason why we play the game and why we love it and what motivates us when the things get really hard, when it's extra hot out and you feel like this day doesn't count for much in camp. And some of those guys, it's getting paid. And to an extent, we all have that feeling of like, I need to take care of my future family, my family right now, everybody. And when you get it, I didn't understand at the time because I didn't have my new contract. But when you do get a new big contract, it's like there is a feeling of like there's a pressure off you. It's like, okay, I did it. I did what I set out to do from a financial standpoint. I'm going to be okay there now. And so if you don't have a good foundation of what your why is, then you might crumble that right then and there. You might not have a good foundation that's going to allow you to keep scratching, keep moving towards a legacy type of build or something like that.
Welcome to What's Next with Eric Wood. Our next guest is Taylor Lewan. Taylor is a three-time Pro Bowl left tackle for the Tennessee Titans, heading into his ninth year in the NFL. He is the co-host of the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, which is one of the top podcasts in the country. Get ready to enjoy some lineman-to-lineman talk, which you all let me know in the past are some of your favorite conversations. If you haven't already, please do me a favor. Go rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you tune in weekly. And also, if you haven't already, please go to Amazon and pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. And the link to that is in the show notes. Thanks and enjoy. Taylor, welcome to the show, my brother.
Buddy, thanks for having me, dude. And what an intro, by the way, too. Got the solid plugs in there. And the book, too. You can expect your boy out there to pre-order that thing because I'm going to definitely listen to that. That's going to be awesome. Probably more of an audio deal for me. My word count per minute digesting isn't the best, but I will definitely pop that in the old stereo as I'm driving down the road. I can't wait to listen to it.
I feel like podcast guys are more audiobook guys. Maybe that's what draws us to the podcast scene because we're more audio in nature. I'm going through the process right now, which is funny. So I do media work for a living now. I call football games. I have a podcast, and the publishing companies right now trying to figure out if I'm worthy to do the audio of my own book. And so I've had to send them like two audition tapes of me reading it. And they're like, can you send one more? We're still not sure. I'm like, it's my book. Get over
it. Right. And also, too, it's not like you have a voice like mine where it's like, okay, he sounds a little like young or like maybe hasn't gone through puberty yet. Like, you got a nice bravado about you when you speak. So it's not like, and you speak clearly, you speak well. I don't think that'll be an issue. Now, if you can grab like a McConaughey or something like that, maybe more of a draw, like an all right type of guy, that might be a pull too. But I don't see, I don't know. I had no idea that would even be a thing. Like, to you'd have to even do anything for your book. That's wild. Like, I feel like you could just say, I'm doing that. And then be like, oh, okay, fine.
I know it. That's what I thought too. But I guess they know better than me. Speaking of McConaughey, have you listened to his book, Green Lights?
No, but I need to, because to be honest with you, I'm a huge fan. And I know like some people for whatever reason, like aren't, but I don't know if you were like this when you played, but like, since like I've discovered YouTube motivational videos, it's something I'm always into, always listening to. And McConaughey did this commencement speech. We might've talked about it when you were on the pod, of like the 11 things to go through life about, and the way he spoke, how he spoke about them. It just, and he's got the cool guy vibe. Like, he's a guy you're like, I want to be a little bit more like him a little bit when you see him do stuff.
No doubt.
He's a dude that I really think has, in a very unique way, has it all together.
Yes, he does. And his book is awesome, but listening to him tell the stories, and it's basically his life story. It's like a series of journal entries that he did that he compiled into a book. So it's him reading essentially journal entries, and it's pretty awesome. And he narrates it perfectly, but I don't think it's worth his time to do the audiobook for Tackle What's Next. But if it isn't me, that would be my first choice as well. But
yeah, he would be a solid one.
Let's switch gears a little bit. All right. So you're heading into year 10 in the NFL, or year nine?
Year nine.
What's your mindset like heading into training camp year nine?
Well, based on how the last couple of years gone for my career, my whole mindset is like take back what's mine type of mentality. And it's been, you know, you have an ACL. Even a year before that, I had a PED, which kind of now is just, it doesn't really affect me as much anymore. The only thing that affected me was statistically individual awards I wasn't allowed to get, but I had a good year in 2019. I was really proud of that year. We went to the AFC Championship. The boys played really well. And then 2020 hit and the season was going great. And then tore my ACL week 5 or maybe it was even – no, it was week 5 because we played week 6 against the Steelers and lost that. We were 5-0. So we played that. That's when we played your Bills, actually, on like a Tuesday night game. Everything got moved around a bunch, and it ended up going in our favor by a long shot. But that was one of those games where we were either going to blow you guys out or you were going to blow us out type of thing. It was just – it was a shit show. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on this thing, but
– yeah, you're fine.
It just didn't – I tore my ACL, and I was like – had this like itch, and I was so fired to get back where I really got to camp, and I was like so burnt out of every single day. And even that, like – I mean, you've had injuries. You've gone through a lot of stuff. When you come back from a serious injury like that, especially for a big guy, you kind of – it takes a little bit to get more comfortable. And so the first 8 weeks, especially that week one for me, was just obviously borderline worth saying embarrassing. And then the second half of the season, I was more proud of it and can kind of put my name behind and be a little more proud of that. But my big concern this offseason, or my big focus, was getting my conditioning back, because a lot of guys – I think for offensive linemen, it's definitely a look past skill set that a lot of guys don't like to acquire. But for me, conditioning is not just something to check a box on. Conditioning is a weapon for me.
Right.
Like I'm a taller linear tackle, and so I'm not squatting 700 pounds. Like I need to be, I need to condition for two reasons. One, when the fourth quarter comes, you're mine.
Yep.
And also this mouth is running all day. And I know we talked about your boy, Jerry Hughes, out there. And you actually told me some things about him. I didn't know. I didn't know he like, got rattled by me, which to me is like, the greatest compliment in the world, because I've always had this thought of if my conditioning is better than everybody else's, then I can talk however I want to talk to the individual I'm playing against. Then they're more focused on hurting me or coming at me than they actually are at the quarterback. And it becomes them just – sometimes I don't even focus on the game anymore. Now it's like, how do I mess up Luan? And that's exactly where I want you to be.
Yeah.
So conditioning and going into the season, like it's hot down here, boss. It's about 100 outside, and that humidity kicks it up however many degrees. It's like cutting through it when you walk out. So the conditioning has definitely been a big thing of mine that I've always kind of prided myself in. So I'm very excited for this season. Excited for that week one, real excited for week two, and definitely excited for week three. It's going to be a good little start to the season.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love how you talked about your conditioning as a weapon. And I always felt the exact same way. I was a taller center. You know, I played at like 310, but it was a stretch to get to 310 for weigh-ins on Fridays for me. That was a big meal on Thursday nights. I was the opposite of many O-linemen in the league. I was trying to put on weight for our Friday weigh-in, so the GM still thought I was truly 310 pounds. But
yep.
For me, I was the exact same way. I'm going to wear you out, and, you know, I'm going to get through the first few quarters. And then, like you said, when it's hot, when it's tough for them, then you can put up a highlight reel. Because when you're playing against the best of the best, it's hard to ever have a highlight reel block until you get them feeling a little sorry for themselves. Maybe it's hot as hell down in Miami. Maybe it's frigid up in Buffalo, and they start to feel sorry for themselves a little bit. Well, that's when I can truly turn it on. And you talked about coming off that ACL. That's no fun. I did the ACL. Coming off of that next year, I felt terrible. I was getting my knee drained most weeks. And I reached out to I was talking to my agent about it one time, and he said, well, when Wes Welker did it, it took him 18 months to feel good. And I was like, well, you know what? I'm about on pace for that. And you know what? I don't feel as bad knowing that it took other guys that long to feel good. But I didn't feel like myself early on in my fourth year coming off that ACL. And then I want to touch on the trash talking real quick. So for me, trash talking was a ton of fun early in my career, especially when I was playing guard and I didn't have to make all the calls and be like super focused at the line of scrimmage, like getting everyone on the same page. But it definitely wears you out because your intensity level is getting up. And then I figured out late in my career, it's like some guys, you talk trash to them and you can get them out of their game. And other guys, especially when we stunk in Buffalo and it's a Sunday at one game, it's cold out. Like they might sleepwalk through the game unless I start talking trash to them, and then I don't want to wake them up. And so it was kind of that balance of like, all right, I got to know who I'm going against. And if this dude's chilling, I'm not about to cut block him. I'm not about to give him a little something after the whistle. I'm not going to start talking trash to him because that might just fire him up here.
What a crazy concept that is too. Cause I think a lot of guys, like a lot of kids that are in Buffalo that have followed you for a long time that want to play offensive lineman in the NFL, they think like, it's all gas, no brakes all the time with a lot of dudes. And the reality of it is a lot of dudes in the NFL aren't like that.
Right.
A lot of guys kind of just are really talented and they don't put a lot of effort in if they don't have to. And it's just a crazy thought, you know, remember being in high school, looking at even college players and being like, man, those guys are the best or the greatest. They probably go hard every single day. Then you get to college and you're like, some of these dudes just don't care.
Right.
And you get to the NFL and you're playing. It's like, yo, it's Sunday and we're playing a football game and y'all just are acting like you don't care. And it's crazy. And that's like one thing, like football, I think every human being who's ever played football has had a love hate type of thing with it. Cause it's like, you love it when you're winning, then you hate it when you're losing, and you hate to lose more than you love to win. And so it's always just like this battle of like your own ego and the game never letting you really have everything you want to have. And then I always made it a point in my head, like the minute I start getting complacent is when you start thinking about hanging it up and being right. Like, I'm not going to insult my legacy. And I'm also not going to insult the game. Cause that's for me, like effort, talking trash and being in shape are like everything. It's literally everything. guys go to these D-line gurus, these Charles Bentley type cats. And then it's not a shot with Charles Bentley. He's just like the number one dude, in my opinion, who like right. stuff really, really well. For me, it's like, you can get all the detail and all the steps and everything in camp. You're going to get all those reps and you're going to be just fine. Like focus on getting stronger, getting leaner and running your face off. You do those three things, you're going to have yourself a nice little camp. You might start off a little rusty technique and all that, but you're going to get in the season. You're going to feel damn good.
Yeah. And some guys need that. Some guys need to be surrounded by guys that are going to push them. They need to go pay a bunch of money. So they put their money where their mouth is and they're invested financially. So then they feel like they have to work out throughout the offseason. I wasn't that way. I could go train at the University of Louisville. I'd see another guy in Louisville for some workouts. And that got me ready for camp. And then the one thing about going to see a Charles Bentley or whoever it is, well, they're teaching you how they feel like you should play offensive line. Well, mm-hmm. I saw a lot of guys have to break some habits that they spent all offseason trying to acquire these habits. And then they get to training camp and that's not the set the coach wants. That's not the stance the coach wants. That's not the footwork. So then they're trying to unlearn things that they spent all offseason trying to acquire. And so to me, yeah. I felt like that was kind of counterproductive at times, but some guys need it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I also think it depends on what offense you're in too. Cause a lot of guys, especially the O-line gurus that are like out there in the world, not necessarily affiliated with a team or even a college team, are teaching the classic big base duck walking up to the linebacker side of things. That's not at all our offense. Our offense is literally sprinting off the ball, running. You don't have a base. You're kind of just flying by the seat of your pants as you go. And hopefully your landmark's good enough type vibes, which is extremely hard to teach and practice. Like you have to go and do those types of things. Now, when you talk about one thing, I don't know how you felt about this, but when it comes to stances and where your hand should be, where your feet should be, how far apart, like unless, in my personal opinion, unless you as a player are like showing like your stance is obviously too wide where you step under yourself,
right,
going like cut somebody off or your like hips aren't turning the right way, then you would change that. I always felt weird about a coach telling me to change my stance. If, hey, I'm getting out of my stance just fine. It might look a little goofy sometimes, but like, this is comfortable. Like the first guy that comes to mind from like a goofy stance look is Joe Thomas on third down.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
He's got the shot put stance and you're like, what the hell is this guy doing? But he got himself in the right position every single time. And then it's a chess game from then on out. And we talked about that on Busting with the Boys is, you know, your sets and how those look, and you can't do the same thing every single time, but you also can't switch it up so much to where you're just like, just throwing dirt at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Right. Yeah. You have to have something that you always fall back on. And for my stance, I was constantly, and you probably couldn't even tell on film, but I was always playing with it a little bit. I might play with where my offhand is. Do I have it a little bit further forward so I can get it up there quicker or back further so I got a little bit more pop on it? And then you watch guys and you try and take little pieces of people's games. And you might say, hey, Alex Mack is so good at gaining ground. Well, he's got this narrow stance. Maybe I should try that. Well, the pouncies are so quick and so fast. Their feet are wider. Maybe I should try that out. And I would goof around, but ultimately, you know, everybody's built differently and you got to figure out what's going to allow you to be successful. But I know exactly what you're talking about because when you said coaches will tell you to do a different stance, I'm like, this guy's moving good. Don't mess with him. Like, let him do that. Now, the one thing I did hate, and third and long's one thing, do whatever you got to do, especially if you're a left tackle, you got the hardest job. But when guys would give away the run or the pass based upon their stance every time, I'm like, I know you think you're putting yourself in a better position, but you just screwed me because now this nose guard is teeing off on me because he knows it's a pass and we have play action here. And I was going to just double under him and grab him and hold on to him and get out of this play easy. Well, now he's teeing off on me because you just screwed me over with your stance.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than when you're doing a play action and you hear the defensive line go bird, bird, or green, green, or whatever their calls are that are telling everybody else, hey, it's a pass. We're going. You're like, you know, you're cursing whoever it is out that you know is in their stance, leaning back or doing whatever, especially when they call out pullers. Now, if you run like stutters or pops or like your classic power schemes and your guard's pulling, like, and they're like, one of the linebackers like, oh, this guy's pulling.
Right.
That ain't me, because if it's my left guard pulling, I'm just hinging. Like, life's easy. But you know, for everybody else, especially the center, that's a lot harder when that nose knows that the power is going the opposite way and he starts playing over the top. It kills plays every single time.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing with offensive linemen. Those five guys that guys got to know the strengths and weaknesses of each other and be able to help play into it. And so you can help guys in certain situations and get guys to help you in some situations as well.
Yep. You're exactly right. And earlier you were talking about ego and the balance of hating to lose or loving to win. And you're a cerebral type of guy. Like I see you as someone who's extremely thoughtful. You enter the league as a first round draft pick in Tennessee. Like, did you feel a bunch of pressure on yourself at the time coming in as a first round draft pick and kind of being the cornerstone that they're going to build their offensive line around?
I got super, super lucky from that aspect. I got lucky and not lucky in a couple of ways, but looking back on it, it is a positive. Is when I got drafted in the first round, there were a lot of question marks over people's heads. Like, why are we drafting this guy? We have Michael Ruiz, who's been here. It was him going into his 10th year. He's a stud. He's a guy that reminds me of a Joe Thomas, like, where he's very consistent, played with his technique that just worked for him and was always going to give you a solid performance game in and game out. And with the in free agency, they just got Michael Orr, you know, blindside guy, yeah, the movie, the whole thing. And so they had two tackles. They're like, why are we taking a left tackle at the 11th overall pick? So for me, the first 3-4 games, I didn't have to do nothing but play like tight end. Now, my biggest fear was Michael Orr going down and me having to play right tackle. Cause let me tell you right now, if I ever play right tackle, it's over. Like, I got no shot. I'm a one trick pony. They say the more you can do in the league, I say the more you can do, the less you get paid. Like, you need to be good. Be great at one thing.
I say that all the time on this podcast. And, you know, we get people from all different walks of life on this podcast and we're just trying to learn from anybody. But I tell people all the time, my favorite saying in the NFL, one of my favorite sayings in the NFL was, the more you can do, the longer you'll play and the less you'll get paid. But that translates to so many things in life. Like, if you're great in sales, you're going to make a ton of money. If you're great in account, whatever it may be, you're going to likely make a bunch of money. But if you're pretty good in a bunch of things, you'll skate by in life, but you're likely not ever going to have a big hit financially.
Right, right. Especially in the league when, you know, all these cliche phrases, not for long is what NFL stands for. It's like, you got to get yours while you can.
Yep.
And so what's cool about these platforms, and Will and I have been super lucky to do this while we were playing, but even the guys that are like you who are now out of the league and transitioning and having your own platform to do things, it's cool to see perspective. Because back in the day, or, you know, even 5-6 years ago, before there were really podcasts out there, people would be in contract negotiations and people would be like, this guy's selfish. He should take less. He should do this. And it's right. Like, listen, even the cap in general, like, there's money to be had. If a team really wants you, then they'll take this guy and restructure him into a signing bonus. He doesn't lose any money. He actually gets more money up front. And then that saves cap room here and there. And you can, there's 1,000 financial things you can do to keep a guy. So it's extremely important for guys to get theirs and be able to make sure that they're set. Cause, you know, just like your situation, you have no idea when it's your last snap. When you were talking to us, telling us, yeah, I thought I was getting ready to go to the Pro Bowl. I'm in there. My wife's giving birth. And we're thinking to ourselves, how are we going to get a 25-day-old to a Pro Bowl?
Right.
And now all of a sudden you're getting a phone call saying, hey, you're done, boss. And it's like, you know, then you don't sit there and go, well, at least I was selfless. It's like, listen, we're all trying to get ours and play hard. But and on the flip side of that, here's what bugs me the most about football players is when you get paid and then you start slacking off.
Right.
It's like, don't be that guy that's just the truest epitome of being a selfish person. Right. If you've got it and you get paid and then you let a little off the gas, it's like, come on, dude, you're better than that.
Yep. And that's human nature to want to do that. And so you got to be so careful about who you pay as an organization, because you have to understand, is this guy, is he only playing hard because it's his contract year? I get asked in speaking engagements all the time, who's the toughest guy you ever had to block? And I say, a bunch of nose guards that were going into their contract year, these big 350-pound guys that for one season went super hard. And, you know, you could run a laundry list of names, but we would sit there breaking down defensive linemen throughout the week. We're like, man, this dude's getting it. We're like, checking him out. Someone Google him. Is he on a contract year? Yep, sure is. And so that's where you got to be super careful as an organization who you pay. And I always felt like, to me personally, okay, the Bills reward me with two contract extensions. Like, I want them to get a great return on investment. Like, I am going to be a kind of be the model of what they want to see and who they pay. But I saw so many guys in Buffalo get paid. And, you know, we're trying to get guys to come into the organization at a time where we weren't very good. The Bills as an organization didn't have a strong name. Our owner was about to die. And, you know, you go pay a Mario Williams to make him the highest paid defensive player in football at the time. Well, why doesn't Houston want to resign him? Like, there might be something there. And then he comes in and not the hardest worker, I'll say that.
Yeah, but what a stud, right? If he wanted to turn it on anytime, you look at it here like, damn. And then he opens his mouth and he sounds like me. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, you don't really sound like that dude. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's so true. And I, my first Pro Bowl, 2016, I was with Alejandro. No, that was the next year. But I was with David DeCastro, and he just got paid. And he was saying, he's like, these next 5 years are going to be the hardest years of my life, my NFL career. And I was like, why? He's like, because for whatever reason, we all have a why. We all have a reason why we play the game and why we love it and what motivates us when the things get really hard, when it's extra hot out and you feel like this day doesn't count for much in camp. And some of those guys, it's getting paid. And to an extent, we all have that feeling of like, I need to take care of my future family, my family now, everybody. And when you get it, I didn't understand at the time because I didn't have my new contract. But when you do get a new big contract, it's like there is a feeling of like there's a pressure off you. It's like, okay, I did it. I did what I set out to do from a financial standpoint. I'm going to be okay there now. And so if you don't have a good foundation of what your why is, then you might crumble that right then and there. You might not have a good foundation that's going to allow you to keep scratching, keep moving towards a legacy type of build or something like that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And connecting to your why, that's so valuable for so many people on a day-to-day basis. I feel like connecting to your why in the morning, each and every day, is something that can drive you to always kind of make your what's next in life your best. Yeah, what we always talk about on this podcast. When you think about where you sit right now, and your why can change. Like, I'm assuming, I'm going to make this assumption, your why now is different having two little girls and being married. Like, I'm assuming now that you've gotten paid and you're financially secure, yes, there can always be more money made, but I'm assuming, has your why changed throughout your career?
Yeah, you know, it is, because for me as a father, like, the biggest thing I'm worried about, especially growing up with not a lot of money and now having quote unquote, a lot of money, and seeing other kids who grew up with a lot of money in high school kind of be shitheads, for lack of a better word. It's like, they didn't know the value of like hard work and all that. My biggest fear for my children is not having good work ethic and understanding, like, you know, a dollar earned feels a whole lot better when you've earned it. And so how am I as a human being going to go and not play as hard, not work as hard, and then go tell my kids 10, 15 years from now, hey, listen, you need to go and do X, Y, and Z. And they're not gonna, but they could turn the film and be like, were you going hard against this team in 2018? You know, were you doing that? It's like, it's kind of like this own, you know, accountability that, like, I think not just football players, but all athletes play. Like, we all tell ourselves this story. And I think a perfect, like, you always tell yourself something to add a chip on your shoulder. Like Steph Curry, when they won the NBA finals, he goes, no one thought we would be here. And it's like, hey, Steph, whatever you got to tell yourself, because you've been there like, what, 7 of the last 9 times, some crazy number. And it's like, you're just, we all live in a delusion, which I think is a positive, to like allow us to be like, oh, they whoever they is doesn't think I can do this, doesn't think, you know, think I've lost a step or whatever. And you play that in your head, we're like, that's the stuff that allows your why to change, that chip on your shoulder to keep, like, keep you invigorated and keep you going.
Yep. That makes a ton of sense there. All right. So at this point of your career, you're aware so many rookies heading into the NFL, so many young guys in the league want to get to. And so you looked up the older guys. You talked about Roos earlier on the podcast, but you're in that role, that mentor role now. So you're about to head into training camp. What's your top advice to rookies when they see Taylor and they say, man, you've made it, you've made Pro Bowls, you know, you've been the leader of this team and all that. What advice are you giving them transitioning into their first year?
I would say, as a rookie, just find someone that you think does it right and follow everything they do.
Yep.
That's like the number one, that's like the easiest cop out answer for that. Cause like, I'm a guy that as soon as I get out of practice, if I have media, I go do media. As soon as I'm doing media, it's sauna for 15, then it's 3 minutes in the cold, then it's back in the sauna for another 15. So, and you're always like playing this game of staying ahead of the chains as far as recovery goes. And I don't know about you when you're at Louisville, but when I was at Michigan, it was like practice, play football on Saturdays, and you're boozing Saturday night and getting after it. And like,
right. That,
it was kind of just like, do whatever you want. I didn't live, there's no cold tub. Like there was a cold tub, but I'm not getting in no damn cold tub. Like that's ridiculous. And then as you get in the league, you're like, okay, there's 17 games now. And then there's playoffs. And then there's all this. So it's like, how do you train and keep your body at a peak performance and not feeling groggy ever? And that's for me, what it was is Roos is a guy that was, you know, he was so efficient and took care of his stuff. There was no downtime or drag or lull in anything he did. So I would watch from afar and watch what he would do. Now, he wasn't a big recovery guy, but everything he did was super efficient. So it seemed like he wasn't doing very much when actually he was getting more done than guys were staring at their phones all day. So all I would do is if like we had a rookie from Ohio State, trash school, but happy he's on the team. He's going to come in. And I hope he picks a guy, even if it's not me, let's go. You see a Jeffrey Simmons or even like a Tannehill or a Derrick Henry. I'm going to go do what these guys do. And then as I'm going through the process of NFL life, living this entire life, I'm going to figure out what works for me, what doesn't work for me, add things, move things, and then figure out your routine. Like at my point being year 9 now, like I know exactly what I'm going to do every single day. There's no wavering on that. Like there's no, there's no playing a game in your head of like, where you're negotiating, well, if I do this and I don't have to do this, it's like, no, you know what you have to do. Now just go and do it and move on. Like, and then it's fine, right?
Yep, exactly. And that's what I generally tell guys as well. You know, find someone that is doing whatever where you want to be in life and go try and learn from them, emulate them. No, you don't have to be them specifically. You're not copying every single move they make, but find bits and pieces, find the veterans in whatever business you're in, whatever you want to be, whether it's health and fitness, find those people and go try and emulate what they do. That's my top advice for rookies as well. I'm glad we're aligned on that one. Do you have a goal amount of years that you want to play for? Like I know most guys come in the league, you're like, man, I just want to get to 10 years. I want to get to 10 years. Do you have that in your mind, or is it a year-to-year kind of evaluation for you?
The thing that I've always said, even since I was in college, even though since I was in high school, I was like, I want to play football until I win. And that's not like, that wasn't referring to a Lombardi trophy from an individual standpoint. It's like, I want to play this game to where when I leave, there's no remorse. It's like, I gave it my all and I know that I'm proud of what I did in my career. Now guys look at my career and especially in the locker room, and I got a lot of respect in that locker room, and I've done a lot of things, not only on the field, but off the field, that I'm really, really proud of, and helping myself immerse into the city of Nashville. But there's still unfinished business for me where I need to feel like I've won. Like I individually have taken the game, got the most out of it I possibly could, gave a little bit back when I could. And then when you walk away, you feel great. There's no number. And I think that's a thing that people do naturally. Like, when people are 18, it's like, what are you going to do? It's like, well, I want to be married by 23 and I want to have 2 kids by 27 and I want to have, you know, this job by 30. It's like, you're just setting yourself up for failure because you have no idea what is actually going to happen. Like, and I brought you up before, but like, you didn't know what was going to happen to you. Right. You had a hell of a career. Maybe it was some meat in the bone you still wanted. Maybe you walked away and you felt fine about it. Like there, but there's, if you say I'm going to play this amount of years, let's say I say I want to play 10 and this is my last year. It's like, am I a failure then? It's like, no, the only failure that there is with football is if you didn't give it your best shot. If you just sat there and didn't give 100% to whatever it is you're doing, and then it doesn't go your way, it's like, then you have no one to blame but yourself. But if you give 100% and things still don't go your way, listen, boss is life. It's just how it works sometimes. Sometimes you get the short end of the stick and you move on, but you don't have to hang your head, which is amazing. And that for me is like everything. Everything is, if I put everything I possibly can, then there's no disappointment at the end of the day. Numbers are just numbers at this point. Like when you get to 9, it's like, you know, you've done it, you know? Yeah. And there is a nice little tone to 10 that everyone likes. You get them double digits. That probably feels fantastic. But, you know, there's guys that you and I both know that played 15 years that probably we're going to look back in a few years and go, I wish I didn't do X, Y, and Z. I wish I would have handled this differently and stuff like that.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And one thing you can always control is your effort and putting everything you can into it. And that makes transitioning out of the league much easier for guys. I feel like the guys that struggle the most in transition are the guys that look back on their career and say, man, there was so much more money on the table if I would have done this, or man, I could have set up a bigger platform for myself if I had played better, if I had done this and that. So just giving it your all each and every day makes that transition out easier. I read this recently. So I always at least wanted to play 10 years, but I would have probably played till the wheels fell off just because I absolutely love playing ball. But I read where there's only been 10,000 players, or maybe there's only been 1,000 players in NFL history that have played 9 years in the NFL. And it wasn't like I was researching guys that have played 9 years, but it gave me like, man, 1 in 1,000 of all time got to play 9 years. So as I sit there like, dang, I can't believe I didn't get to 10, which it's funny. I got my NFL benefits package the other day and they actually gave me a credit for the 10th season. So maybe I'll start telling people I was a 10.
Oh, nice.
I know. It doesn't really like move the needle or anything financially, but I saw it on there. Well, the Bills kept me on the roster until the start of the league year, because as soon as they cut me, the cap hit was going to hit immediately for my injury guarantee. And so they kept me on through the start of the league year. And so because of that, I guess they gave me credit for that 10th season. I was technically injured during that 10th season. Anyways, yeah, but it gave me some like a little bit of pride, and not that I needed it, but reading that was like kind of cool. Like, holy smokes, only 1,000 dudes all time. But even with that, if I would have cheated the game, if I would have felt like, man, yeah, the game got taken from me, but I really didn't try that hard years 4, 5, and 6. Like if I sat back and said that, it'd been really hard for me to transition out of the NFL. All right, let's transition a little bit here. We're going to get into some current Titans League talk, and then I want to talk to you a little bit about your podcast at the end. So when you're heading into year 9, you guys were the number one seed in the AFC last year heading into the playoffs. Like, where's your mindset as a team for the Titans right now? Is it we gotta go win a ring?
I think that should be everybody's
right
foundational piece when you're walking into camp. That should be absolutely like you want to taste the greatest possible achievement you can have as a team in the NFL, and that is winning a ring. For us, it's a long season. So it's, hey, let's get ready and win week one. Let's get ready and take care of business in week one. Then we go to a very hostile environment week two. Let's go win that one. And so it's going to be a long season. There's a lot of studs out there, especially for me. I'm playing a lot of studs this year as far as the D-line goes.
Right.
And so,
are you guys playing the AFC West?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, there's studs out there, Bob. And, it's for us getting to that number one seed and losing the way we did against the Bill or the Bengals was, you know, when I saw them play the next week against Kansas City and they're going back and forth and they're getting donkeyed at one point. In my head, I'm like, good. I knew we could have beat the Bengals. That's what it is. And the Bengals come back and I'm like, in my head, we could have gone to the AFC championship, and then they win the AFC championship. It's like, oh my God, like we could have really done that too. And then they're at the Super Bowl. Like in my opinion, you win that game against the Bengals, which obviously not our best showing on offense. It was not great at all. You, like I said, the game you play in your head of we could have done X, Y, and Z. So you keep that with you for the next 6 months. I know guys like Derrick Henry who are still mad about that game, still angry. And so There's a lot of stuff in the Titans locker room to be motivated for right now, individually, from a team standpoint. And so we have high expectations for ourselves, but it doesn't mean anything you know, like where we are preseason, where everyone is preseason, doesn't mean nothing. Like, you got to go and do it. So first week's against the Giants, and that needs to be, we need to go take care of business. It just is what it is.
Let's take a moment for one of our sponsors. The daily vitamins and supplements I've been using for optimization each and every day are those from BrainMD. Go to BrainMD.com and use code ERIC15 at checkout for 15% off. Yeah, and then you come to Buffalo week two, and that's going to be a fun atmosphere. And this Bills-Titans kind of rivalry over the last few years, like, it's been intense, and those games have been good. I mean, you all, in the COVID year, you all smoked the Bills at home. Last year was back and forth. One of the best games of the season last year, and you all take it on Monday Night Football down in Nashville. We got Monday Night Football this year, so it's been in a major spotlight way too as well. So that's going to be a bunch of fun. And when you look at the AFC is absolutely loaded. Like, everyone kept saying, like, where's Aaron Rodgers going to end up? And he ends up back in Green Bay. But I was like, I know where he's not going at 40 years old. He's not going to the AFC to compete with all these young bucks at quarterback to try and go chase another ring. But so, like, in my opinion, when I'm looking around the AFC, there's so much, like, the Titans give the Bills fits because the defense is kind of built to stop a Kansas City, and then you guys run the ball at them with a 250-pound running back, which opens up the play action, and it's just tough for the Bills defense to stop. Mm-hmm. But to me, like, until, like, the Bengals beat Kansas City, but I still thought Kansas City was the better team. Like, and the Bills got knocked out by Kansas City. When you look around the AFC, like, who do you see as the biggest threat to the Titans?
Well, I think you look at the teams that are in it every single year, and that goes, that's the Bills, that's Kansas City. That whole AFC West is a threat. The entire AFC West, you look at it, and they're a massive threat. I think even in our division, people hate on it, like Matty Ice going to Indianapolis. The Colts and the Titans are built the same exact way. Frank Wright is a hell of a head coach. Yep. They got a good offensive line. Their defense plays sound, good football with a linebacker with a nickname Maniac, like, who lives up to it every single week. Those guys are studs, and I feel like they've not gotten their flowers enough because of our successes and how it's kind of gone between the two of us the last couple of years. But they're a great football team, and it could have gone either way. Houston, you know, they have a lot of adversity to overcome and a lot of stuff, but they're still Houston, and they still have a chip on their shoulder when they play us because we were the Oilers, and then we went over it, and then the fan base is still backed behind it. And then even the Jags, I said this on Blessing with the Boys, like, they're so close to being good. They're one good coach. They have players. Like, that's not an issue. You have talent on that roster. They just, if they have this coaching staff that's taken over, if they go and do what there's, like, what they seem like they are, they're going to be a good football team. Like, Trevor Lawrence is a stud. They got good defensive linemen. They have some good linebackers. Their offensive line's solid. Their running game is great. Like, they're built similarly as well. So it's like, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, the AFC really wasn't bad. It was all NFC.
Yep.
All NFC all the time. And it seems like it's kind of transition now. There's some stud NFC teams, don't get me wrong, but it just seems like everywhere you look, there's no easy pickings in the AFC. There's no, like, dub. Okay, that's a dub. It's like it's a dogfight every single year. And the NFL is built like that, right? The when it was 16 games, the NFL is built to be an 8-8 season.
Right.
And every year you do well, you play better teams. And that's just how it is. So it's kind of a cliche political answer that's not going to get a lot of clicks on that one, but everyone's legit studs.
I know it. And when you look around, you know, you don't know how what's Joe Burrow like this year. Does he take the league by storm and just light it up? Well, then you got Cincinnati. You know, does Lamar Jackson tear it up again in Baltimore? There's just so many good young quarterbacks, and, you know, we're both O-linemen, but the quarterback's the most important position in all of professional sports. And so when you look at how many good quarterbacks there are in the AFC, and then because there's so many good quarterbacks, now you have to load up on edge rushers to try and get to them. And so there's just so much talent in the AFC right now. Right. It's going to be a bunch of fun this year. All right, so the Bills add two Titans to the roster in free agency. And I, without having any insider info on this, I believe when you get beat by a team a few years in a row and a team's kind of got your number, you think, okay, well, what do they have that we don't? And there's some toughness in the trenches, especially amongst the offensive line and then interior D line. So they go out and get Daquan Jones and they bring in Roger Saffold. What are the Bills getting in those two guys?
Well, Daquan and I came in together in 2014. He is not only a great person, He's a hard worker too. He does an amazing job stopping the run. And don't get it twisted. Now that man is slept on from a pass rushing standpoint. He can rush the passer. He's a big physical body that can also get a little twitchy, a little hip movement in him too. That is going to cause some fits for some people. I've always been a big fan of Daquan. He's an awesome dude. And also being with him since 2014, he's an all-time cat. I don't know how things went for him in Carolina last year, but I know he's happy to be a part of the Bills. Roger Saffold, we talked about this. He's probably the best run blocking guard I've ever seen. That man takes linebackers and absolutely just throws them into the bleachers. The first one I think of is the first play against the Raiders in 2018 against Compton. That poor boy had no chance. He got hit so hard. He hit the ground. And you know, when you kind of get laid out, you try to get up as fast as you can. Compton's still trying to get up, but the grass is still moving under him because he's still sliding on the ground. He lays dudes out. Now, I know he just got in a car accident, right? Like, he just got hurt his ribs while we were talking. He texted me, so I'll have to see how serious that is, but I hope he's all right. That boy is he's an awesome dude. He's a great dude. The whole room's going to love him. Him and Dion are going to be a nice little duo on the left side. You guys have a lot to look forward there. And, you know, I hate that he's gone, but I'm happy he got paid and got more money. So he's gonna do well. The Bills are a team, man. They're absolute studs. And your boy Josh, I'm a big fan of his. He is just he's a hell of a quarterback. A hell of a quarterback.
Dano's and Pabst Jerky is bringing you a spicy collaboration to deliver a Southwestern punch of flavor with Dano's Chipotle Jerky. This is an all-natural, no-sugar, high-protein, and low-fat snack perfect for an active lifestyle by giving you the fuel to get through your next big adventure. Available now at PabstJerky.com. I know. He's a hell of a quarterback. He's a hell of a competitor. He's a great dude. I listened to that episode on your podcast, Bustle with the Boys, and it was fun listening to him chop it up with you guys. There was a little Bills Mafia takeover on the podcast that week with me and Josh Allen coming out on the podcast at the same time. But
yeah,
all right, so let's transition to the podcast for a minute. And we talked about you kind of catching some crap, especially early on doing the podcast. We talked about that on your podcast. Everyone go check that out, and you can kind of hear us talk about, as a current player, you know, what the challenges are of having a podcast, and people thinking, oh, Taylor's devoting this much time to it, maybe that's why you gave up a sack, or maybe that's why you got a holding penalty. Far from the truth, but you can go listen to that there. I want to know, who's a guest that you had, guys had on the bus, that you were the most, let's say, starstruck by?
Oh, man, I don't know. Pat McAfee came on. Now, I'm not starstruck by Pat, but I think the way he went about things and did it, and how he's just taking the world by storm right now is admirable and beautiful. It's just like, he is just winning the game of life, which is unbelievable. It's like the way his strategy and how he's done stuff. But the biggest name we've probably had on, besides yourself, has to be Bert Kreischer. Yep. I think Kreischer came on, and you know, I'm a huge fan of comedy. I grew up watching SNL, grew up watching stand-up comedy and stuff like that. The Blue Collar Comedy Tour, when they started going with Foxworthy and Ron White, later the Cable Guy, Billy Engvall. And so immersing ourselves in that world of comedy, because everybody who's a comic has a podcast now. So Shab's been on, and a bunch of dudes have been on. Callan's been on. And it's cool to see a different world, because the longer you live on this earth, the more you realize how many more things you can do. There's so many more opportunities and lives that you can possibly live. That is just, it's just cool. And so Kreischer came on, and I think I had about 30 words total in that thing. That man can talk like nobody else. He was telling crazy stories and unreal. His energy is so vibrant and beautiful. And it was just a beautiful thing to be a part of, watching this man like take you through a journey. And like, as he's telling you these stories, like you can literally see the picture in your head, and it's just, it's awesome. And that podcast has been, I think Will would say the same thing, bigger than we've ever thought it was going to be. It's become this thing where, you know, I'm in Canada for a month with my wife, and you know, Canada's it's slower moving up there. It's a great time. It's beautiful. But I'm going into a restaurant, and people are like, busting with the boys. Like, they're about it. And you see people wearing Titans hats and cologne. It's like, this is just wild. People are fans. But they got put on because of this podcast. And now they watch me playing football, which is just, it's just awesome. And it's, I think it was just the perfect storm of stuff. Like, when we did it, how we did it and the uniqueness of it being on this old 74 Bluebird that just happened to fall into our lap. And it's been just an outstanding ride, dude. It's been awesome. And I think there's going to be through the years, I think that thing's got a lot of potential that I'm excited to see where it goes.
Oh, it's got monster potential. It's got monster potential, and it's already one of the top podcasts out there. I saw you guys were number one for, you know, even if it was a daily or a week, but number one in sports. Like, that is huge to pass up Pardon My Take any day of the week. If you could pass up Pardon My Take, like, that is a monster podcast. So I'm proud of what you guys built. I love the Pat McAfee episode. My favorite takeaways on that, in like, I learned a lot from listening to that, because as I transitioned into media and podcasts, and look, I don't want to do 3 to 4 hours a day of media work. Like, that's not what I want to do. And that's what he's doing currently. And that's how you go get a $30 million a year deal from FanDuel, by putting out that much content. But listening to how he works and how he strategized the entire deal. And, you know, he'll do wrestling, which adds to his platform, which brings more views back to his podcast. And, you know, you turn on Mad Dog Sports and it's Pat McAfee show throughout the day. So what he's built is absolutely incredible. It was awesome hearing him talk about his work ethic and how much edge he has about, you know, walking away from the game and everyone saying how stupid he was because he could kick a football for $2 million a year. And to see what he built and that edge that he brings with him was fascinating. And then the Bert Kreischer one was hilarious. One, two, he tells that story, The Machine. And that's one of my favorite comedy skits of all time. Like, laugh out loud funny. And he's in Buffalo in mid-October. And he's doing a show the night before a Bills game. So I'm going to hit it. I'm going to try and get him on the podcast prior to kind of build up that show, make sure it gets sold out and all that. So I'm going to try and make that connection. But we talked. So those were kind of guests that blew you away. And I asked Compton this, and he said Joe Rogan. But for you, who would be a dream guest to get on the bus?
Man, Joe Rogan is obviously the tops of top because of the audience he brings. And I love the man's insight. I'm not going to get political by any means, but he does, in my opinion, does an incredible job of playing both sides of the fence and really getting information rather than just trying to push an agenda, which I think is very cool of him. And I really like what he does and him just building and growing. He's the biggest podcast in the world, and that's unbelievable. For me, man, I grew up like a little bit of this little punk kid, get out of my room mom vibes, and the Dickie pants way down with the Vans and the three studded belt that goes all the way around the waist. Like, that was like my vibe. And so, you know, my heroes growing up were like Travis Pastrana for Nitro Circus, who is one of the best freestyle motocross riders, if not the best of all time. Johnny Knoxville from Jackass, that whole crew are dudes that I just like completely look up to, have had looked up to since I was like, you know, 10 years old when they started doing that, even when CKY, when they were doing that. So I think, you know, Joe's obviously a big one. You love The Rock. He's a big time dude, huge personality. And, but I think Johnny Knoxville for me would be just cool to sit in a room with him and talk to him and realize, see all the things he's done. When you watch somebody on TV for your entire life and be able to sit down and have a conversation with them, to me, that's just as cool as it gets.
Yeah. And, you know, he's got some brilliance to him. So, you know, you build a brand like Jackass and you're literally calling yourself a jackass and you're promoting a brand where you're acting like a jackass. But then to build a brand like that and to understand everything, build that team around him, like, he's got some brilliance to him. Like, that reminds me of like a lot of the Barstool group that, like, they're funny, they goof around, they do memes and all this. But like, you sit down with Portnoy and Big Cat and PFT, like I have at Super Bowl parties, and you'd think they'd be these big drunk idiots. And they're like super insightful. They're super generous. They'll make connect. They're just great. You know, they're smart people. That's how you build a brand like that and build a business model like that. All right, here we go. We got a few recurring questions and we'll get you out of here. You mentioned earlier you're not a reader, but do you have a favorite book?
So what I was going to say when we were talking about the audiobook is like one of my deficiencies as a human is I'm not a great reader. Like, I can, you know, I'm not like fourth grade level, but we're pretty dang close. So for me, like, making an effort to read is really a big deal. So I try to read a couple books every single year. And I actually read my first fiction novel this year. It was called Marker the Hunter. It's like this country western mystery novel that was like 10 bucks at a bookstore. And I grabbed it. I'm like, we'll just see how it goes. So I started flipping through it. I didn't put the book down for a week. finished the whole thing. It was an incredible story. But for me, mostly what I read is like the self-help books, the motivational books, the how to understand how the human mind works and business and all that. Cause to me, it's like, I try to play life like a video game in the sense that, and that sounds a little cheesy, but like when you play video games, you try to level up and you try to like get the better armor or the better this or whatever. And that's just what I'm trying to do for myself is like, how do I get more information into my brain to where I can become a more well-rounded individual? And I wasn't always like this, but there, you know, you have kids and stuff and things change quite a bit. And so there's a book by Tim S. Grover called Winning. And it's Tim S. Grover is a stud. He was the, I guess, strength and conditioning life coach for Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant and for Dwayne Wade. It's unbelievable. Now the stuff he says in there, you're like, it's pretty intense.
Yep.
And it's kind of like all gas, no brakes on absolutely anything you do and not having anything distract you, which is the world we live in now. It's impossible not to be distracted, but listening to him, listening to how Michael operated, how Kobe operated, it's just, that's probably the book that like wowed me the most so far. I've read another book called Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Holiday. That's an incredible book. How it like, you know, there's stuff in that book where if you delete the ego, you're able to go through life on more of like just handling things as they come instead of like being emotionally involved with absolutely everything that comes to you, which is a huge thing that I definitely needed as well. And then there's another book called Unlocking Superman, which has everything to do with like the flow state and how, you know, these athletes or these rock climbers who are free climbing these giant mountains and that one little mix up, they're dead. And Travis Pastrana is in that book. There's a lot of guys and even, you know, the traditional sports, football, basketball, hockey, soccer, that type of thing, baseball, how people get into flow state. Now, when you're so worried about not messing up or you have to do well, you're not in the flow state. But when you're just playing and things are coming to you and you're handling them as they come, that is the most fun way, which I've been able to experience a few times playing, but it's a hard thing to see. So I've really enjoyed those books and I try to make sure and read as much as possible.
Yep. And I'm the same way. We have a very similar mindset as when it comes to reading. Like I'm trying to read things that I can implement in my life. If I can read, you know, 10 to 15 pages of book every morning, then I'm going to knock out a bunch of books throughout the year. I'm going to acquire a bunch of knowledge and I'm going to, like you said, keep leveling up in life and keep progressing in life outside of just sports or whatever. Maybe I'm gonna have to check out those last two books. I did love the book Winning as well. I've read all of his books and they're super intense. And you get done reading it, you're like, am I cheating myself because I don't wake up at 3:30 in the morning and,
right. Yes.
And do this and that? But it's good to have that in you, like to understand what made Michael Jordan, what made Kobe Bryant. And not to get off subject, but Kobe Bryant to me is a guy, and I hate even admitting this, but I appreciate him and his game and his mindset and work ethic so much more after he passed than even prior, because I just dug into it all so much after. And I wish I appreciated more when he was playing. I just didn't understand all that he brought to the table each and every day.
And it's crazy how that kind of works, right? And because when people pass, there's no more, they can't give you any more. They might've had stuff, but his legacy will live on forever. And he had an incredible life. But when people leave, it definitely makes you think more about them and kind of look more into what they did. If he was still alive now, he won an Emmy, I believe, for Thank You Basketball, or there was a documentary, something about basketball that was incredible. And he was going to take the world by storm doing more and more and more, but just the things he did in basketball were incredible, absolutely incredible. And it's cool because in that book Winning, how they talk about how Michael was, well, Michael knew when enough was enough, when Kobe really never did. Like it was always like more is better type vibes. And so, yeah, I'm the same way as you. I don't think I appreciated Kobe as much until he was off this earth. Interesting story about Kobe. I've told this in the pod, I think, but my wife and I, for Valentine's Day, we're staying in Encinita, California. It's one of my favorite places in the States. I love going to Encinitas, go down there, stay on the bluff, go surfing or try to surf at least, and just kind of live like a beach bum for a little bit while you're training. Well, there's Catalina Island, which is, you know, not far at all. You can literally see the island from where we were staying off in the distance in the water. And we took a helicopter flight from, Carlsbad Airport, which is a small little airport, over to Catalina Island for like a Valentine's Day weekend. And the guy who was flying was incredible, dude. He was amazing. He was like being fun on the helicopter and talking to us. There was a whale, so he like cruises down to the whale, and we're like 10 feet above this thing, just watching it swim, just hovering above it. Takes us to Catalina. He's an incredible guy. Comes and picks us up, and on the way back, he's like, yeah, you know, I do this. It's IEX Helicopters is what the company was that we use. He goes, I do this a lot, but really I'm Kobe Bryant's pilot. I take him everywhere on the helicopter. And I used to take him from, I believe it was Carlsbad, to games all the time, because he had a house in Carlsbad. And, you know, when all that information came out of him passing away, you think to yourself, well, is that the same guy? And then the pictures came out, and it was the same guy.
Wow.
That was flying us that one day. And that guy, his impression was something that even before the whole Kobe thing happened, my wife and I would talk about, like, this guy was all, like, he was just an all-time dude. And he gave us a 25-minute flight there and back on two separate days. And it was just, he left an impression. And it's just sad to see people like that, you know, pass away and live a shorter life than you expect them to.
Yep. But as a pilot, as a helicopter pilot, he was impacting so many lives. It'd be amazing to think about how many lives he impacted just by doing his job with some joy, some intention, you know, and bringing his best to the table. And now we're talking about him on a podcast years later. It's amazing when you're intentional about your actions and your words, how much impact you can make to where if you're lazy about it, if you're whatever, you're going to miss so many opportunities like that. What's your favorite restaurant in Nashville?
Oh, that's a good one, dude. If your boy's trying to get a steak, there's a bunch of steakhouses in Nashville now, but I like going to Jeff Ruby's, and I know there's about four or five of those in the States. There's one, I think it started in Cincinnati. There's one in New York and stuff like that. But you go there, you get the Wagyu steak. You want to spend a little too much money. It's like $20 an ounce for the steak. And I get 4 ounces because I like to get the appies, the crab legs and all that. But my wife gets 6 ounces. And this thing is like butter when you cut it. You literally eat it with a fork. It's that good. So if I'm getting a steak, that's probably my number one spot. But from like, there's one place in East Nashville. It's called 210 Jack. They do like ramen bowls and stuff, but they have like these little, like little small appetizers that come out like three at a time. And they have like these shishito, these Wagyu stuff. Shishito. I guess I'm a big Wagyu guy. It sounds like these Wagyu stuff, shishito peppers. Bro, they are so fire. And they don't take reservations. You just got to walk in and hope for the best. And there's always a line out the door. 210 Jack's unreal. And then another one is Sunda. It's in the Gulch. It's a good little sushi spot. It's great. And we order food from there all the time. So those are my main three spots. I don't go out a lot anymore. I used to, trust me, my first couple of years in the league, now I try to take the world by storm over here. I was down on Broadway with the street rats out there trying to get down. And, but now you got kids and stuff like that. It's like, man, I don't go out too much more. It's just, this is the coolest city. And I think anybody who plays football and plays here, this is the best city to play in as far as like location, stuff to do, place taxes. To live, raise a family. Was that?
Taxes.
Yeah. Taxes. You can't beat the taxes now. So it's great. I love Nashville. It's unreal.
Yeah. Nashville is incredible. We try and get down there as much as we can. We're only 2.5-3 hours in Louisville. So we get down to Nashville a good amount. You were talking about Jeff Ruby's. You got to check out the episode. I've had Jeff on the podcast and you got to listen to his episode. He's fascinating. Like telling stories, like his mom owned a diner when he was growing up, but he was the kitchen manager for when he was like 9 years old on. And he told a story about when he was 11 years old, he was in class and he had to go. He was like, it was just weighing on me. I had to go fire this dude. So I go out to a payphone in school at 11 years old and fired a guy at the restaurant and then went back to class. I mean, he is a trip, but I grew up in Cincinnati and I never got to go to Jeff Ruby's as a kid. And so the first time, so I grew up in Cincinnati where the Jeff Ruby's were started, but I never got to go. And the first time I ever went, we got one in Louisville. And when I signed with my agent, he took me to Jeff Ruby's and I was like, I freaking made it. Like that was like so vindicating. Like I'm at Jeff Ruby's now, and now we go to Jeff Ruby's and just eat sushi sometimes. But that being said, Jeff Ruby's always has like a soft spot in my heart being from Cincinnati. And that's when we came down to the Bustin' with the Boys and I was on my 10-year anniversary trip, because a lot of guys go to Nashville and appear on a podcast on their 10-year anniversary. But
there you go.
But we hit the Jeff Ruby's down there the night before that.
The thing about Jeff, dude, that is awesome. We used to do O-line dinners. We'd always start at Jeff Ruby's. I'd be like week one because we'd set the bar for like a price. And the way the O-line dinners work is, let's say the dinner is $6,000. So for the rest of the year, no matter where we went, if it didn't equal $6,000, the difference would be added to the pot for the online trip. So like in the middle of the year, we'd go to like Martin's Barbecue, fire barbecue out here. It's unbelievable. But the bill would be like $1,200. So then you're adding $4,800 to the pot the next day. And so you would take advantage of trying to get that good Vegas trip or wherever you want to go. Me personally, if I can get the boys to Cabo, I'm all about that. One thing about Jeff Ruby though, he came in one day during our O-line dinner and he was like walking around. He had the fedora like cocked to the side. He had the pinstripe suit on. He was Mr. Gangsta walking around, dude, like just a mafia type cat. Yep. And he walked over. He's like, how's the food? Is it pretty good? Starts talking, takes a fork. And we have some of that Jack Daniels chocolate cake they have. And he takes a fork and takes some of the cake from a plate, random plate that was sitting in front of somebody. And he goes, that is pretty good. And like walked out and just like left it a cloud of dust. We're like, what just happened? Like, what a character that guy is.
He is. That's hilarious and not surprising one bit at all. I got two questions on the O-line dinners. One, who would pay for the dinners? And then two, what was the best trip y'all took?
So the O-line dinners we would do, I think it would go oldest to youngest. So like this year, Ben Jones is our oldest guy. He's year 12. So he would be the first guy to go. I think the second oldest is probably me now. And I would go second. So Ben would go and we'd pay for that. We just go down the ladder, boom, 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 boom. And I know there's a lot of crazy stories about rookie dinners and all that. We don't try to kill our boys because unless they're, you know, bad, they're not fun to be around. Like an Isaiah right. Wilson, a kid we had a couple years ago drafted, you know, anytime you can take some money from that kid, you probably try to do it. But the rest of the kids, like Dylan Raddins, who was a rookie last year, just a top-notch rookie, always had snacks, always had waters on the table for the boys. Like if the boys want a dip, he went and got dip, no problem. Like just a solid cat. So we didn't take advantage of him very much. And as far as trips goes, man, I've been on four now and they've all been in Vegas, which before growing up in Arizona, it's a 4-hour drive to Vegas.
Yeah.
So it was really nothing like going to Vegas for me. I was like, we'd be there for like hockey tournaments for my brother. And I never really liked Vegas. And then a couple of years ago we went and I was like, damn, this place is actually, it's not just like all the degenerate stuff you see people doing left and right. Like you can go to shows, grab a nice dinner. Your boys became a little bit of a fan of gambling out there. It's a nice little deal. Not too much, but I do like the social game of craps, getting out there, rolling the dice. Your boy, Richie Incognito, actually took me and my wife to the first McGregor-Diaz fight and taught me how to play craps. And I won like 10 grand.
Nice.
It was the first and last time I made money in that game, but it was an absolute blast, man. They went to Miami 2 years ago and that's when I tore my ACL. So I didn't make the trip, but they said that was a blast too.
Yeah. We would always do Vegas for our O-line trip. And then I'm like, look, we have 10 fat guys rolling in. They charge us so much to get anywhere. Like let's go down to Key West one time. And then we never went anywhere but Key West. Cause we could go down there. It was hard to spend like $1,000 in a week, much less 10 grand on one night at a club where you can't even hear the person next to you talking, which is my biggest pet peeve. Cause you know, I get a couple cocktails in me. All I want to do is tell stories and cut up.
Yeah.
And then you go to a club and you're just standing there and you can't even talk to anybody. I'm like, all right, that was a waste. So we went down to Key West and never switched it back.
Yeah, dude, Key West, I went there for the first time this year. Absolutely love it. It's got the tropical vibes. There's chickens everywhere for whatever reason. It's 4 miles long, 2 miles wide, and an absolute blast just to be there. I love Key West.
Yeah, it's a cool spot. All right, last one for me. This is What's Next with Eric Wood. What's next for Taylor Lewan? And I know we got training camp of the season coming up. So I'll ask this. So your what's next coming up is a grind of a season. And we talked a lot about that. What's one thing you're looking forward to a training camp and one thing you're dreading?
What I'm looking forward to training camp is like going through a whole training camp. Last year, coming off the ACL, you didn't really practice very much. And I didn't get a lot of reps in before going into the preseason, even week one. So I'm excited just to practice. I'm excited to be in the grind of it, be sweaty, hurting with the boys, like doing everything everybody else is doing and dying while doing it. My least favorite thing is what I just said, dying during camp. It's hot. It's just an absolute brutal time. And it's not fun for anybody, but it's definitely a necessary evil in our world. Another thing I'm actually looking forward to is we have these cold tubs that sit outside right after practice and we call it Cabo. So you finish practice, You go in the locker room, hey, boys, Cabo, flight to Cabo is leaving in 5 minutes. And then all the boys get together and we go put some good music on. We sit around these giant tubs and just relax and hang out 10, 15 minutes, get the nice sun on us while we're getting our legs back under us. So that's like the one of the small victories you get while you're in camp.
Oh, absolutely. I used to love those outside cold tubs after practice. It feels so good. You're refreshed. And then you're cutting up with everybody. And if you had a good practice, that's like as good as it gets. Like you're just sitting there like, man, I just did my job. I dominated today. Can't wait to watch the film later tonight in meetings. Like they're just going to be all over me about how good I did. But if you had a bad day, you're sitting there like, you're like, gosh, this day cannot end soon enough. I'm going to go get ripped tonight. Everyone's making fun of me sitting in the cold tubs about getting smoked at one-on-ones by some rookie or something. And then you're like, now I got to go to meetings tonight and hear about it again. I already got ripped at practice and now I got to go to meetings tonight. Like to hear about that, but those were fun times.
No doubt about it, dude.
Hey, I can't thank you enough for your time coming on the podcast. Good luck this season. Stay healthy and go make another Pro Bowl. And I would say go win you a Lombardi trophy, but if it can't be the Bills, I'll be pulling for my brother.
I hope so, brother. Thank you very much. And that's probably the best I could get out of you, huh? So I'll take that as a big W. Thank you very much. I appreciate having me on, man. This is awesome. I love what you're doing. And I hope people come and watch this and live it and love it because this is a good time.
Absolutely. I appreciate you, brother.
All right, buddy. I'll see you.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode presented, as always, by Punched Energy Chews. If you haven't already, please leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Share it on social media as well, and we will share it too. I would also love it if you could pre-order my book, Tackle What's Next. It's on Amazon, and the link to do that is in the show notes. Let's keep making our what's next in life our best yet.